It is Wednesday, my dudes, and that means it is time for another episode of Codex Radio. It is Wednesday, the 13th of June, 2018, and as always, I am your host, Endless Odyssey. This is episode 23 and part 11 of our reading of Planescape Torment. Last week, after fighting a few cranium rats and accidentally setting off an acid trap, the Nameless One and companions found themselves within Marta's hovel in the buried village beneath Sigil, adjacent to Farad's court. After allowing Marta the seamstress to fish around inside of his body for thingies, the Nameless One resolved a dispute between two of the inhabitants of the buried village regarding who owned a specific name. And we ended last week's reading right as the Nameless One was about to enter Farad's court. So the good news is there aren't a ton of side quests within the buried village. It's a pretty sparsely populated area in the game, so nothing will stop us from meeting Farad at this point. So hopefully he will hold some answers regarding the Nameless One's nature. And now I give you part 11 of Planescape Torment. Chapter 30. The recesses of Farad's court were cooler still, the air cleaner. The musty smell of incense was light in the air, the slight smoky scent was barely detectable. Perhaps this place had been a temple once, or a library, but now the chamber, far too great to serve one man, was emptied and gutted by the hands of looters. The slabs of stone that paved the floor thrummed with each step, and a mystic violet light wept from the crevices between. Long cracks had split straight fissures along the floor, and strange energies swirled like lavender milk between the planks laid haphazardly over them, forming careless walkways. There was greatness in this court once, and now it was a scarred shell of what it once was. Its memories, grand or cruel, had been eaten away by time. The throne at the opposite end of the room, perhaps once an altar, perhaps once a sculpture, was a stone hand twice the height of a man. Cushions padded its cold palm, and its fingers were curled forward gently like the loose grip of a dead man. The archway curled over the palm were decked with lanterns that gave off a lurid orange glow.
"So I seen you've returned, corpse."
The voice was hoary and tired, but the room was large and empty, and Farad's greeting carried over well. I turned to see an elderly man leaning heavily upon a crutch. His left leg was twisted, and as if he tried to walk in two directions at once and paid the price. His maggoty-colored skin was bunched heavily upon his skull and is flecked with liver spots. He was mumbling and smacking his lips as his eyes made a circuit of the room, but ultimately his gaze returned to a stone sundial set carelessly beside a pile of broken stone draped in faded cloth. Farad. The man's eyes lit up as I walked over, standing before him with arms crossed.
"'Tisn't my steady crop of jink come to Farad's waiting arms again. Greetings, corpse."
He smiled a wicked grin.
"Have you come to ask Farad for another jaunt into the mortuary walls?"
I had been searching for him for so long that I had a tough time thinking of what to say. "You're a tough man to track down, Farad. I've come for information. I've been told that you know something about me."
"Know something about you?"
The light in Farad's eyes dimmed. He studied me, mumbling slightly as his eyes flickered up and down my frame.
"Corpse? No? Yes?"
His eyes meet mine.
"Ah. No.
Farad, what is it?" Farad was studying me with a dead-even gaze.
"'Tisn't a mummer's fare, corpse. No time for games. No time for Farad to play the wheel. What are you asking such questions for?"
I have forgotten myself,
and I was told to seek you out, that you would know something of me, I said truthfully. Eh. Farad licked his lips. They made a rasping sound, like dry parchment on sand. Now who told you such a thing, corpse?
Well, no one told me exactly. There were these tattoos on my back, and they told me to seek you out if I ever forgot myself.
Ah, so little said, so much told.
Farad fell silent, and suddenly I had a feeling that Farad was dissecting me, like a corpse on a mortuary slab.
I know much you would know, yes, much indeed.
Farad smiled slowly, the folds of flesh on his face peeling back like a curtain.
What do you know of me?
Farad licked his lips again, then settled himself upon his crutch like a vulture.
No, no, not free, the question you ask.
His pasty white hands tapped the edge of his crutch.
Much I can tell you, but the telling has a cost.
I grumbled.
Go on, Farad.
Farad tapped the flagstones with his crutch and sneered.
His village is not all that lies beneath Ragpicker's Square.
Yes?
Chambers, vaults, corridors, filled with the dead, all asleep in their coffins. Somewhere in those halls, somewhere there, lies something misplaced. Something mine.
What is it?
A small thing, a trinket, such a trifle.
As Farad spoke, his words started echoing, as if two people were speaking. I knew I'd heard them before, from my own lips. Gently, I touched the memory, and it was enough for me to recall. It's a sphere, made of bronze. Ugly. Feels like an egg to the touch, and it smells of rotten custard. Am I right?
Farad fell deathly silent for a moment, then nodded. Yes. How much do you hide from me, corpse?
He chuckled.
Did you return to see if I remember what it is I want?
Why don't you get one of your collectors to search for it? I asked suspiciously.
Because corridors need no more dead from this village.
Farad tisks.
Strong, fast, clever. These are qualities my villages do not have. They go below, they do not return.
Farad glanced at me.
Perhaps the dead will welcome their own, That is what I think, corpse.
Do you know where the sphere is?
Ah.
Farad's sigh was like shifting sand.
And why do I suppose I ask you to look for it, corpse? I do not know where it is. I know it is buried deep, far deeper than any villager has ever gone.
Farad tisked.
It may be the catacombs where the waters run deep. Deep.
Very well. I'll do it. But I want to know what I'm buying with this trinket.
There's a lot of knowing rattling around my brain box, corpse.
He held up a withered finger.
One of them is this bit of wisdom. Everyone wants something, whether they know it or not. There's much I know about you. Much you would want to know.
I scoffed. I doubt you can tell me anything of value, Farad. The bluff made me antsy. I needed his knowledge as much as anything.
I've learned another priceless bit of wisdom. For you, I give it for free. A man is often wrong about a great many things, and a dead man is one who has been wrong one times too many.
Farad licked his lips.
Much do I have to tell you that one would consider of value?
He had a point. Very well. I will see about finding this sphere for you, in exchange for what you know.
Very well. A deal struck, a deal made.
Farad cracked his crutch sharply against the flagstones.
A sphere for a peek inside my brain box. Now, corpse, there's no time to waste. Go to the gate at the south and east and tell those slumbering fools to open it for you. Make haste, make haste.
Hold a moment. I had some other questions before I leave.
Then ask.
Farad smacked his crutch on the cobbles as if passing sentence.
Come, come, corpse, time's short and so's my patience.
When you greeted me, you said something about taking me on a jaunt to the mortuary. What did you mean?
You tell me, corpse. Perhaps the dusties that live there are more to your liking than some sweet-bosomed wench.
Farad tapped his crutch on the floor, the clacking echoing throughout the court.
most forgiving of the Dusties to let you stride in and out of there as you please, considering you don't have the decency to stay in the dead book. The images of those grim chambers came to me. Who would want to go there? I wanted to get into the mortuary? But why? Corpse. You were so bent to get in there. Now you spill it, you don't even know why you wanted in there in the first place. Sometimes it's a wonder why the planes turn. What is this place?
Farad's eyes rolled in his sockets, scanning across the ceiling, walls, and then the floor.
This here's Illwind Court. Not a name of my choosing, thank you kindly. And the kip outside this court's the Buried Village Corpse.
What is the Buried Village?
Well, now there's a story.
Farad licked his lips again, then shrugged.
But to tell true, the story bores me. The short of it, it's a piece of the hive that got bricked over one day. A piece of sigil got penned in the dead book.
What do you mean?
You know them floating goat heads that serve the lady? Them dabbis? No matter if you do or not, they all go around fixing, breaking, burying, building, all the time. You follow?
I nodded. Yeah, go on.
Well, as a chant goes, and a dusty chant it is too, being so old, them dabbises just damn well bricked over a section of the hive one day, and all bodies just forgot about it. Dump a lot of trash on it, and soon nobody even knows it's here.
Farad smiled.
Wicked, no? A piece of sigil, all forgotten.
How did you find it?
Farad tisked. I still have my eyes, corpse, and I still have my ears. And we have enough sense to tie the two together, then finding the dark of any matter is not as hard as some make it out to be.
Farad rubbed his filthy cloak.
Now, was there something else you wanted to pick my brain box about? You didn't just come to hear about this rag hole, did you?
My skin was beginning to crawl. Farad knew much, but it made me uncomfortable talking to such a wretched, twisted figure. When I awoke in the mortuary, I was missing a journal. Do you know where it is?
Farad squinted at me, the folds of flesh coming down almost over his eyes.
A journal you had when we spoke last has lost itself.
Farad chuckled dryly.
These eyes have not seen it, but keep 'em peeled, I will. Would love to read such a magnificent work.
And finally, to the heart of the matter, the one question that many asked, that many wanted to know. I heard you have found a wealth of bodies, Farad. Where do they come from?
Does a mage tell the secrets of his craft? So it is with the collector.
Farad frowned, studying me.
Perhaps I will tell you, but you must promise that it is for your ears only.
I gestured, weaving my hands through the air. My fingers crackled with the small spells I had prepared, but Farad seemed unimpressed.
Are you comparing yourself to a mage, Farad? I think you're insulting the craft.
Farad flushed nonetheless as he tapped his crutch against the ground.
Collecting is as much a skill as any petty mageling can hold a copper to.
Farad, finding a bunch of dead bodies and selling them can hardly compare to the study of magic. I let the energy dissipate and waved dismissively, flicking aside the sparks with a careless hand.
Was it not skill that found this place?
Farad's voice rose to a bellow, and his fingers tightened around his crutch.
It took sense to find this place, it did, and it took sense to make the most of it.
I laughed, playing the old man like a fiddle. The Buried Village? Come on, what's the secret of that?
Very well.
Farad tapped the flagstones with his crutch and sneered.
This village is not all that lies buried beneath Ragpicker's Square.
I nodded, intrigued. Go on.
There are catacombs.
Farad gave the faintest of smiles, and his eyes gleamed like gold.
Places black as pitch, filled with the weeping stones and the precious dead all asleep in their coffins.
Where do all these dead come from? Farad affixed me with a lopsided stare.
Corpse, everything dies. Life is so short, but death lasts for so very, very long. Many people, many deaths.
His stare traveled past me.
Such a waste for their deaths to be useless in a dusty's arms, eh?
I raised an eyebrow.
What do you mean?
Farad smiled greedily.
Not all the dead that goes to the mortuary gate is fed to the furnace, corpse.
The Dusties bury some of the dead in the city's bowels, under the village. So near, so close is such a place. I would have been a fool not to see opportunities.
Worse than a vulture. A defiler of graves, one who disturbed the dead. Not even to pry the gold from their teeth or steal the gems interred with them, but to pick the bodies from their resting places and sell their bones like scrap. So, you rob the catacombs of the dead the dustmen place there, sell them back to the dustmen, and then they bury them again? Farid nodded, then chuckled lightly. The sound was like shifting sand.
These catacombs are as deep as a Dusty's pockets.
And as deep as a greed of a man, I said, disgusted.
Oh, yes, Farid sneered. And the greed of a man is something that shall always be counted upon when naught else is left, eh?
Having satisfied my curiosity on all points except those that were of importance to me, I left Farid alone to his shadowed throne. Chapter 31. I decided to spend the night in the buried village, knowing that Marta would allow me to sleep in her hovel. Next day was soon enough to start on Farid's quest. Besides, dying is not something one recovers from in an afternoon. At the gate on the edge of the village was a massive human, dressed in cast-off patchwork clothing and reeking of old ale. He was truly huge. It was obvious he was chosen for this job not for his brains, but for his brawn.
What do you want?
A repulsive man. Clever, devious, but most of all repulsive. The mood set by the name Wormhair was fitting for him. What lies beyond the gate? I pointed to the dark tunnels across the bridge that lay on the other side.
The Weeping Stone Catacombs. Lots of debtors. Lots of crypts to loot.
Why do they call it the Weeping Stone Catacombs? He scratched his neck.
Lot of water drips down from above. Makes it look like the walls are crying. Name follows.
Farid gave me his leave to go down to the catacombs. I need you to open the gate. With that, the fellow gave a curt nod and unbolted the gate. Sigil truly was a city of disarray if, even when supported by a whole faction providing services for the dead, a village of grave robbers could be built up next to one of its own ancient crypts. Urns had been smashed, offerings at biers looted, and coffins and graves were smashed and torn open for even the slightest glint of copper. The thick layer of dust over many of the broken bones was a testament to how long ago they had been disturbed. The squeaks and scuttles from the shadows told us that we weren't alone.
The damn things have just about infested the city, Mort grumbled. 80 years ago, they tried to eliminate the cranium rats. Called a few beast lords, a poisoner, a piper. Each time, the city was cleaned for 2 weeks, but after that, the things just crawled right back. No one knows where they come from.
Once the answer to such a puzzle is known, the problem can be solved.
I stomped on a rat, and it crunched without a squeak underneath my boot. I doubt we'll be able to figure that out right now. I'd rather just find that damn sphere and get this over with.
Yeah, it's not like some random half-addled codger has asked for your help in finding the breeding grounds of these guys, but oh, what a hero you'd be,
Mort teased. A distant, inhuman noise, half-growl and half-shriek, caught my ear. Keep your guard up. I'll keep ahead and take the first blows. Mort stays in the back and keeps an eye on things there. Dakon is quick and agile, so he can skip to the front or back with ease. He smirked.
Tired of my sage advice and snarky commentary already?
Finally, Mort gets it. No, but we do need someone to watch our backs. Another cry in the distance. The noise was pitched yet subdued and gurgled as if the creature's vocal cords were in the process of rotting away.
Vargoyles,
Dakon whispered under his breath. But if the word was supposed to mean anything, I didn't pick it up. And yet there they were, right around the corner. Three of them. Vile creatures they were. Heads fluttering in circles with ichor-dripping fangs and tongues fat and long like those of a hanged man. Flapping, membranous wings held them aloft, with talons tipping each jutting bone. They were chalk-white, ghastly,
with screeches like those of a dying hawk's. If I said those were the most horrifying things I'd yet to come across, I'd probably jinx it.
They are of the weaker variety,
Dacon said sagely in his hollow voice. Then we fight, I growled, and threw myself into the fray. The tactic was brutal, yet effective. With my ability to regenerate torn flesh and broken limbs, I soaked up most of the damage as I was surrounded. Outside, Dacon and Mort could flank and hack away at the enemy's backs.
Be warned,
Dacon called as the head slavered over my flesh. The saliva of the dead was thick and foul, with a ropey quality best left forgotten.
Those who die from a Vargoyle's fangs arise as one themselves.
Now you tell me. Surrounded by Vargoyles, I was in a poor position to play to my strengths and lob bolts of furious doom onto the critters. Hell, I was saving them for something I thought was more threatening. If I died, would my head detach and float around, biting my allies? Would I be consigned to a fate of eternal damnation, fluttering around these halls and attacking unwary buried villagers looting the tombs? The Eternal Vargoyle, they'd called me. Watch out for the one that's scarred and ugly, as opposed to the ones that are just ugly. Well, at least then Mort and I would have something in common. But enough philosophizing. Time to kill with something sharp and or heavy. There was no real weight to the critters, and thus my dagger knocked them away as much as it stabbed them, but bowled into Mort's budding forehead or cleaved in half by Dacon's keen blade was effective enough. And then there was another chorus of screeches from down the hall. Oh, damn. Another fight. One arm hung uselessly at my side as I lay against the wall. The ancient stone was damp and cold, and the rubble itself was moist with stray trickles and condensation. A large hunk of flesh had been torn from my bicep by hungry fangs, and slowly the pink flesh beneath was knitting back together. If I looked closely, I could see the pulse of blood flowing through the tissue. I chose not to look closely. Mort made a clicking sound with his tongue.
Damn, that hurt, Chief?
They severed the nerve, I said flatly. Perhaps I was being stingy with the blood charms, but all I needed was a few hours and I'd be in top condition again. Those were best saved for Mort or Dacon. While we're waiting, I cleared my throat. Dacon?
What is your will?
He intoned. Perhaps this downtime would be good for me to study up on the Circle of Xerthamon. Dacon stared at me a moment and, with a simple utilitarian nod, slid the plates into the proper configuration for me. I accepted it with my functional hand, and Dacon leaned back with his Xerth blade laid across his lap. Looking down at it, he entered a focused, meditative trance. The black-edged blades became smoky, rippling until it became clear as polished glass and keen as thought itself. Again it rippled, and the blade took on an obsidian hue with fierce serrated fangs lining the edge. Leaving Dacon to his mental exercises, I began to read.
Xerthamon labored many turnings for the Illithid, Arathi twice deceased, and his partnership in the cavernous heavens of the false worlds. His duties would have broken the back of many others. But Xerthamon labored on, suffering torment and exhaustion. It came to pass that the Illithid, Arathi twice deceased, ordered Xerthamon before him in his many-veined galleria. He claimed that Xerthamon had committed slights of obstinance and cowardice against his partnership. The claim had no weight of truth, for Arathi only wished to know if flames raged within Xerthamon's heart. He wished to know if Xerthamon's heart was one of a slave or of a rebel. Xerthamon surrendered to the Illithid punishment rather than reveal his newfound strength. He knew that were he to show the hatred in his heart, it would serve nothing, and it would harm others that felt as he. He chose to endure the punishment, and was placed within the Pillars of Silence, so he might suffer for a turning. Lashed upon the pillars, Xerthamon moved his mind to a place where pain could not reach, leaving his body behind. He lasted a turning, And when he was brought before Arathi twice deceased, he gave gratitude for his punishment to the Illithid, as was custom. In doing so, he proved himself a slave in the Illithid's eyes, while his heart remained free. By enduring and quenching the fires of his hatred, he allowed Arathi twice deceased to think him weak. When the time of the rising came, Arathi was the first of the Illithid to know death by Xerthamon's hand and die a third death.
I looked up. I was hesitant to disturb Dakon in the middle of his meditation, but he noticed my flickering gaze. I have read The Unbroken Circle of Xerthamon. I want to speak to you more about the Way of Xerthamon. He took the blade from his lap and gave me his full attention.
What did you come to know?
The moral of the story was simple. It was a prayer I had heard Dakon utter many times in battle. Endure. And in enduring, grow strong. The words seemed to strike Dakon strangely as I spoke them. His forehead creased, then resettled into its normal passive expression.
Your will has brought you the knowing of the third circle of Xerthamon. With this knowing, I impart this to you.
He took the circle and, with a deft motion, twisted one of the links so one of the plates slid forth. He handed that plate to me.
Meditate upon its teachings, and the knowing of it shall give you strength.
Very well. I will study this circle. Is there more you can teach me? As I asked the words, I suddenly noticed that Dakon wasn't looking at me. He was holding the unbroken circle in his hands, studying it. His blade had taken on the same texture as the unbroken circle, and Dakon suddenly seemed older somehow. Dakon? Dakon's black eyes rose from the circle and looked at me.
Know that I did not believe you would come to know the teachings of the circle. It is a difficult path you will walk in learning the way of Xerthamon. Is your mind focused on this matter?
I nodded. Yeah. I wish to learn more. Dakon's fingers felt around the edges of the stone circle, and he twisted it clockwise, the links clicking until they have settled into a new configuration. He handed it to me.
The next circle of Xerthamon is open to you. Study it, then I will hear your words.
I glanced at the plate he had given me before looking over the new circle. A meditation that would grant me the strength Xerthamon took with him in his year of punishment. Thanks. Get some rest. It may take me a while to meditate on this. Again he nodded and leaned back with his Xerth blade held in the crook of his arm. Eyes closed, features placid, I could never tell if he truly was asleep or not. I began to read.
Know that the rising of the people against the Illithid was a thing built upon many 10 turnings of labor. Many of the people were gathered and taught in secret the ways of defeating their Illithid masters. They were taught to shield their minds and use them as weapons. They were taught the scripture of steel, and most importantly, they were given the knowing of freedom. Some of the people learned the nature of freedom and took it into their hearts. The knowing gave them strength. Others feared freedom and kept silent. But there were those that knew freedom and knew slavery, and it was their choice that the people remained chained. One of these was Vilquar. Vilquar saw no freedom in the rising, but opportunity. He saw that the Illithid had spawned across many of the false worlds. Their worlds numbered so many that their vision was turned only outwards to all they did not already touch. Vilquar's eye saw that much took place that the Illithid did not see. To the rising, the Illithid were blinded. Vilquar came before his master, the Illithid Zigitaris, with the knowing of the rising. Vilquar added to his chains and offered to be their eyes against the rising. In exchange, Vilquar asked that he be rewarded for his service. the Illithid agreed to his contract. At the bonding of the contract, a dark time occurred. Many were the betrayals Vilquar committed, and many were the people that the Illithids fed upon to stem the rising. It seemed that the rising would die before it could occur, and the Illithid were pleased with Vilquar's eye. It was near the end of this dark time when Xerthamon came to know Vilquar's treachery. In knowing Vilquar's eye, Xerthamon forced the rising to silence itself, so that Vilquar might think at last his treacheries had succeeded and the rising had fallen. He knew that Vilquar's eye was filled only with the reward he had been promised. He would see what he wished to see. With greed beating in his heart, Vilquar came upon the Illithid Zigitaris and spoke to his master of his success. He said that the rising had fallen, and the Illithids were safe to turn their eyes outwards once more. He praised their wisdom in using Vilquar's eye, and he asked them for his reward. In his greed blindness, Vilquar had forgotten the knowing of why the people had sought freedom. He had lost the knowing of what slavery meant. He had forgotten what his Illithid masters saw when they looked upon him. And so Vilquar's betrayal of the people was ended with another betrayal. Vilquar came to know that when Vilquar's eye had nothing left to see, Vilquar's eye was useless. The Illithid gave to Vilquar his reward, opening the cavity of his skull and devouring his brain. Vilquar's corpse was cast upon the field of husks so its blood might water the poison-stemmed grasses.
I never understood how you could bear to read that junk, Chief, Mort grumbled.
Go to sleep, Mort. I paused. On second thought, why don't we talk? It's been a while since we just chatted. Might as well keep him awake as long as I could. His snoring might have lured some more Vargoyles our way, and I was already short one working arm.
He clicked his teeth eagerly. Well, in that case, let me tell you about the time I worked for the Arch-Wizard Kellebach. Now this guy was getting on in years, and stingy as a goat, though really in the sense that I can't think of a good analogy for either of these things right now. Anyway, he set me up on a shelf as a cheap burglar alarm, and one day this cute elvish rogue decided she'd try a robbery with as little encumbering her as possible. 10 agonizing minutes later, he was snoring away, tucked inside a rag-filled sack with our packs piled on top. I whittled away the hours reading over my makeshift tome, bleary-eyed, copying the new spells and memorizing others, practicing the basic exercises of magery. Focus, gesture, chant. Focus, gesture, chant. In between the arduous task of preparing my spells, I looked at my companions and wondered how it came to this. A nameless wanderer followed happily by a floating skull and an aging githzerai that looked as if he'd be more at home in a monastery than risking his bones in a dank crypt such as this. I was grateful to my companions, true, but at times like this I had to wonder what made me so fortunate, or what made them so cursed or daft as to join me. With a sign, Dakon's eyes lifted. He nonchalantly glanced at the snoring pile of goods and then looked to me. Sitting up straight as a spear, the man was all business and discipline. What have you come to know? I thought about this long and hard. When one chooses to see only what is before them, they see only a part of the whole. They're blind. And just as Vilquar was blinded by his promised reward, so were the Illithids blinded to the true rising. For when they heard Vilquar's words, they turned their sight outwards again, didn't they? And then the rising was free to strike? Dakon nodded.
Know that you speak truly. Vilquar's eye blinded both Vilquar and the Illithids. The tentacled ones thought the rising to be no more. When the rising occurred, the ground drank deep of Illithid blood. So was victory born from treachery.
I stroked my chin. It's a curious lesson. Why would it be part of the teachings of Xerthamon? Dakon's blade bled into a dead night black, and his voice deepened. For a moment, I thought he was angry, but I was unsure.
There is much about the way of Xerthamon and his path that is difficult to know.
Do you know why Vilquar's eye is part of the way of Xerthamon?
It is part of the telling of how our people came to know freedom. It lets us know that there are those, even among the people, who are not of the people, and that even in the greatest treachery, a greater knowing may be achieved.
I nodded. Very well. You have come to know the fourth circle of Xerthamon.
He took the circle, and with a deft motion, he twisted one of the links so one of the plates slid forth. He handed the plate to me.
Meditate upon its teachings, and the knowing of it shall give you strength.
Thanks, Dakon.
Interlude. The Harmonium guard Mikan growls.
You're telling me that a den of robbers and thieves is living right under our noses? And stealing from graves?
You roll your eyes and sip your next drink slowly. While many had milled in and out to relieve themselves, doing so now would all but forfeit your seat at the bar. Perhaps you could offer Mikan a gold piece to keep watch over your seat, but fewer breaks means more gold saved. The man truly is a new recruit. The Harmonium may have conquered and pacified a few worlds, but no police force could root out all the criminals and lowlifes from the Hive. Poverty would simply breed more, even if the Free Leagues and Chaos Attacks didn't send the hardheads scurrying. Then again, all the bloodshed in the streets would surely attract the lady, and Factal Sarin is much too sensible to... In the background, Adolin strums his harp. Throughout the tale, he had moved from a quirky strum when Sai Tavakas spoke of the buried village to a calm, wistful tune through the exploration of the crypt. The song played like a forgotten memory, interrupted by only a dramatic crescendo each time Sai described battles and fights in full gory detail. The woman was a bloodthirsty little savage. The elf purses her lips and toys with her spear. Crouched over and cat-like on the stool, Sai looks ready to heft the obsidian tip straight through Mykon's clueless skull.
In the world I hail from, it's quite rude to interrupt a telling. Worthy of slitting a man from navel to nose, in fact.
She cocks her head and grins madly. Bloodthirsty indeed. Ardolin's fingers dance across the strings, strumming a tense, dramatic tune. In his corner, he cocks his head and smiles as a few patrons chuckle.
But if you are truly curious, she continues, casually setting aside her threat, I did visit the dingy corner of the Hive soon after decoding the puzzle box. This long after the Nameless One walked the streets, one can only expect that much has changed, however. Farad's name had been long forgotten in the buried village, and the Dustmen had reinforced the crypts with deadly protective wards. All that remains is a hidden alcove where madmen and vagrants hide, visited occasionally by the Bleak Cabal.
Mykon leans back and grumbles something under his breath about arresting the woman for threatening a keeper of the peace. But by himself, and with only two hands to wield his swords, it was doubtful that he could fight off the furious mob that would form if he did so. Sai Tavakas pauses to see if there are any other protests she could quell with a death threat. Hearing nothing, she continues.
Now, I was never one for philosophizing, so let us skip ahead to something more interesting.
Chapter 32.
I've fought against gangs, hordes, and flocks. If you're good with a blade and happen to have the ability to tap into the fabric of the cosmos and bend the laws of physics to your will, all it takes is a few bolts of focused rage or a chromatic orb, and the crowd scatters like chaff on the wind. Of course, this strategy depends on the fact that your enemies can feel fear. So it's quite easy to conclude that undead are another manner of beast entirely. Individually, each one of us was a seasoned enough warrior that we could handle a couple of Vargoyles ourselves. With a makeshift phalanx, the winged beasts face us head-on, unable to flank or surround any one of us completely. Those that tried to fly past risked a severed wing. And when the last Vargoyle fell, the path was open to us. We entered what I could only describe as some kind of butchery. The metal gratings of this alcove were crusted over with old, dried blood, as if the room had been used to store the leavings of a charnel house. I could imagine the floor covered with splayed severed limbs and gutted torsos. If this was a warehouse of flesh, perhaps the initial waste disposal for Marta's Chamber of Horrors, then it has seen frequent and recent use.
The stench of rotting meat was thick in the air, and scuttling sounds rose from the darkness below. The sanguine decor also served to hide the triggers for some of the traps in the metalwork. While the coffin at the end of the chamber yielded only a grotesque collection of limbs, who the hell wanted to store such things? Stomping on the flanking metal grating yielded a little passageway down. Yep, just as bad as I expected. Within seconds, I found myself doubled over in the corner, spilling my guts into a puddle of what once had been blood. Time and filth had transformed the crimson pool into a ruddy, foul-smelling ooze. The sight of yellow vomit splashing into that mass set my stomach spasming once again. The chain reactions had me going until I was weak in the knees and trembling. Trying not to look at the mess on the floor, I spat the remains of my last meal against the wall. Even Dakon looked queasy. Then again, the yellow pallor was natural for him.
Ugh, Chief, I really, really hope we don't have to dig through this stuff to find that sphere of yours.
Mort took another look around.
And by we, I mean you.
I pushed the thought of the crimson midden heap from my mind. No one could be cruel enough to order Mort to dig through that with his teeth. I can't think of anyone who would willingly descend into this gore pit. As Mort would describe it later, by the look of things, it was Sigil's rotting cooch at that time of the month. Yet something drew me here, as if I was led on a string. And that's when I saw the corpse. The features and flesh had rotted beyond recognition, but by his garb, the man was a thug. By the hair and bone remaining, he certainly wasn't human. More than that, though, the man was out of place here. His body hadn't been picked over, stripped, and dismembered. What caused his death, I couldn't be sure, but I knew there were at least some clues that I could find. I sifted through his belongings. A bird's claw, dried into a husk and enchanted as a wand, and a severed arm. The former was a simple matter of identification. The latter was intriguing. Petrified, scarred, and gray with age, the arm looked as if it were a fitting club. Now, at least, I can chuckle at the thought that I'll rip your arm off and beat you to death with it could in fact be a genuine threat. Intricate tattoos spiraled up from the wrist and onto the shoulder, beautiful patterns that had been drawn with care. I ran my hand along that mummified limb. I should take this to Fel when I can. Mort disagreed.
Gross!
Thankfully, the next chamber we explored, the mosaic tomb, was much less interesting. A poison trap or two, a simple enchanted hammer, which would probably fetch a good price, and a few coins, and we were all set. Perhaps I should feel a little guilty about taking these treasures from their resting places, but necessity guided my hand. Perhaps I was too quick to judge Farad and his ilk. Then again, I don't plan on peddling bones and manhandling the dead themselves. It was when I was traveling down one corridor that things got really interesting. I had yet to meet any real life in these catacombs, with the exception of the cranium rats. Most of the things that moved were undead, born of otherworldly stirrings of dark and dismal plains beyond. You can't exactly have a friendly conversation with any of them. Of course, I was exploring with an eerily quiet warrior maid and a skull who turned inane, mindless chatter into an art. So, of course, I was surprised when the walls started talking to me. Down one of the corridors, the stones sweated with the damp air, and stale, moldy-smelling water flowed across the cracks. Over the years, they had carved deep runnels into the wall. The carved stone faces that decorated the tomb, perhaps as guardians or watchers, were heavily scarred by their ceaseless weeping. As I passed by one of the twisted stone faces on the wall, it called out to me in a creaking voice that sounded like the shifting of boulders. Its voice was a slow groan, as if it wearily struggled to force out each word.
Immortal, regard me. I am Glive. I would have words with you.
I jumped.
How did you know I'm immortal? I see a burning purpose within your shell. I see many things in that falling dust of these tunnels. You lack something essential and that keeps you from death's sweet embrace.
Regaining my composure, I straightened up and listened. There were stranger things in the plains after all. What did you want to say to me?
Listen, this place holds much danger for you. Treachery awaits you on the surface, and your way is long and winding. At the end, you will find what you have sought, but you may not want it then.
I blinked. Are you some sort of oracle?
Oracle? No. I observe. That is all.
In that case, perhaps you can answer some questions I had.
What did you want to know?
I looked around. What can you tell me of the catacombs around us?
The catacombs were carved eons ago to house the dead of the city, who did not wish the tender ministrations of the dustmen. They have become the refuse ground of the city, where dwell monsters barely seen, where humans prowl like scavengers among scavengers. Many as one patrols these tunnels and has turned many against their nature. The dead nations prowl as well, guarding against the depredations of the humans who come among them.
A nation of the dead protecting these catacombs. Fascinating. Tell me of the dead nations.
The dead have achieved life in their own way. They rule a portion of these catacombs. They struggle with many as one for the heart of these tunnels.
Tell me of many as one.
You have heard of cranium rats. When they gather, they become more powerful, a shared mind. They and their servants, were-rats, seek mastery of these undertunnels. They war with the dead nations.
Ugh. Best to stay away from those things, then. Tell me of yourself. How did you come to be in this situation? His sigh was mournful and weary with the weight of ancient memories. I felt sorry for him.
I was once a respected leader of my community in the lower ward. A petty lord sought to increase his power at the expense of my people, my friends, my relatives, and friends and I spoke against him.
I had yet to see the heights of the class divide in Sigil, but by its depths the gulf was sure to be wide. That was very unjust. What happened then?
And then he captured us, one by one. Bound our spirits and senses into these screaming faces. Under the ditch, where all filth and sigil comes eventually. And then he let the polluted waters above flow through our mouths and noses and eyes.
Is there anything I could do to help you?
I am cursed to remain here until fresh water passes my lips. There is a magical flask of water in the Drowned Nations. Bring it to me and give me a taste of it, and I shall tell you of someone who can help you unlock its full potential, and you shall never lack for water again.
That could be useful. Where is this flask?
I do not know. There was an artist named Chad, who frequented these tunnels. He knew. Find him, and he may tell you.
And how do I get there?
Through the dead nations, where the dead walk and rule. Or through the warren of thought, where many as one hold sway. Neither is without risk.
I nodded to him. Thank you, Glive. I'll see what I can do to help you.
And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Codex Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, or if you didn't, please consider sending us some feedback. You can tweet at me. I am at @endless_odyssey on Twitter. Or you can send your feedback directly to the show's account, which is @codex_radio. Or you can send your letters to codexpodcast@myriadtruths.com. Thanks so much for listening, folks, and we'll see you next week.